Yeah, suicide terrorist is probably what it amounts to. Anyway, Lyndon LaRouche is scheduled to be my guest here shortly. I'm sure that we will address that subject with him. Don't go away.
It's a delicate machine, and
thanks a lot, Don. We appreciate it.
That's...
All right, we'll have more traffic here before too much longer, 13 minutes after the hour. Now, what we're getting now is it appears that one airplane hit each of the two towers. And, I mean, that's beyond coincidence, some organizational thing. Many of you have already turned on your television sets. You have the advantage over me because we don't have a TV here in the office.
No, we should.
But the picture that I'm looking at right now of MSNBC is just incredible. Who was that? Oh, okay. Well, we just had Mr. LaRouche on the line. He will be calling back on the other line here quickly. And we will go from that. So, what I think I will do is, he's here now. We'll go ahead and address this. And I want to give out a number several times here. Because a lot of you, during the course of my discussion with Mr. LaRouche, or towards the end of the program, will want some more information. So I'm going to give you a number now, 1-888-347-3258. And if you will call, there will be people on the other end of the line who will be happy to talk to you and clarify some of the discussion that we're having. Also, information regarding videos, pamphlets, anything else regarding what we're going to be discussing will be available by calling that number, 1-888-347-3258. Well, I'm still sitting here looking at this incredible picture, this incredible image in front of me of this burning World Trade Center as these two jets have just slammed. One jet has slammed into each of the two towers. So we'll go ahead, and I'm going to go ahead and get my guest on here with me, Mr. LaRouche.
Yes.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jack.
Well, what a pleasure and an honor to have you back on my program again. I was hoping to move the discussion initially with what we were going to do here into the area of the sublime.
Yes, right.
But now with what has just happened in New York with this, interesting enough, just yesterday a bundle of leaflets from your organization in Leesburg that I regularly pass out of my office, warning of terrorist attacks in America here very shortly.
Yeah.
And here we have the morning that you're on my program, what's happening in New York at the World Trade Center. I don't know if you've seen these images or pictures yet on the television.
I haven't yet. I was sitting up here working and just heard about it before I went and called you.
Yeah, well, the smoke is billowing out of the one tower here. My wife called me a moment ago, and... apparently, they caught live on film the second jet smashing into one of the other towers.
So, obviously, this is not exactly an accident.
No, sir, I don't believe it is.
It's not a coincidence. It's obviously, this is so remote a probability that there has to be intention in this thing.
Well, it's one thing for somebody to strap on a jacket made of dynamite and walk into a diner in downtown Jerusalem. It's another thing to jump inside of a Learjet and go smashing in the side of a building.
The thing you have to look at in the context in which this is occurring is two things. Now, first of all, the first suspicion that's going to be on this is Osama bin Laden. That name is going to come up prominently, whether as suspicion or just suspicion.
Certainly.
And the second thing, which is not unrelated to the Osama bin Laden question, is this festival, which is planned, really a terrorist festival for Washington, D.C.
At the end of the month.
Yep. We have a global process. But the financial system's coming down. That's always a dangerous thing. Because when the entire system is in being shaken up the way it is now by the financial political things happen because various people try to intervene and orchestrate events by spectacular interventions, which will change, shall we say, get public attention off one thing and put it on another. So this is obviously, I mean, I cannot draw a conclusion except the circumstances tell me something rather evil is behind this thing. And I don't know which, but they're both connected, because I know the Goldsmith brothers, for example, Jimmy Goldsmith was key in helping to create, he's now deceased, Osama bin Laden and people like that, the Taliban and so forth. And at the same time, his brother, Eddie Goldsmith, who is still very much alive, is sort of the God, spiritual godfather of this movement, which is planning to inundate Washington, D.C. with some pretty nasty stuff at the end of this month.
Something to a much greater degree than what happened in Seattle.
Oh, absolutely. This thing went from Seattle. Seattle was it was basically a terrorist operation. But, you know, if you look at the history of how terrorist operations were run, you would run a hardcore terrorist operation, and they would round it, they would run sympathizer operations, which were not necessarily wittingly connected to the terrorist operation, but they were run coordinated simultaneously. In Seattle, you had the so-called legitimate protest, which was largely trade union-backed. But into the same scenario, you had coming out of Canada, based in Canada, and the Canadian-U.S. border is rather leaky. And they were coming across in droves over there to do funny things. Then you had the key operation, which a conference in Porto Alegre, Brazil, just a short time ago, which Teddy Goldsmith chaired. And this cuts into the people who are generally the ambiance of international terrorism. Then from there, from Genoa, he went to some other things, but the big thing from Porto Alegre to Genoa, where they staged an upscale terrorist operation. Now, from what I know of the details of the terrorist operations being prepared in Maryland and Virginia, Washington, D.C., where they're being pre-staged, this is intended to be much bigger than Genoa. So if what you have is a challenge to the integrity of the nation's capital, of what is ostensibly the most powerful nation, nuclear power, on this planet. That is not funny.
If you can, the FBI is now saying that a plane was possibly hijacked for this attack. If you can do that with the World Trade Center, what could you do with the White House?
Absolutely. I've been very concerned about this. You know, I'm not very sympathetic to what some of these agencies do. But I'm concerned not just as a presidential free candidate, I'm concerned with the security of the United States and the peace of the world. And this is not good for the health of the nation or the world. These things should not happen. We could prevent this kind of stuff, but we just don't do it. Because someone says let it happen.
How would you prevent terrorist activity?
Well, the thing is, if you dispense with the myth, if there are a number of unknown people up there coming out of the mists and nobody knows where they come from, then you would say, how can you stop the terrorist operations? If you know how the world is actually organized, you know you cannot organize a sustained preparation for terrorist operations in any country without the backing of a powerful government or governments. So that if you know what the operation is, and I would say, you know, I've been warning against this Teddy Goldsmith operation all along because I know what it's connected to politically. It's extremely dangerous. And if I had been president or in a similar position during this period, I would have had an all-out, very discreet, but very all-out and effective discussion with some other governments in the world, and we together would have taken appropriate steps trying to neutralize this kind of danger. Of course, you can't be 100% in this sort of state, but you can do a pretty good job. And two planes, now that's pretty big. That's one plane, that might not be preventable. Two in the same shot, now that's not small-time stuff.
No, this is pretty serious. Hold on a second here, Mr. LaRouche. I have a traffic update I need to give my listeners. Don, go ahead.
Good morning. That accident at northbound traffic
Thanks a lot, Doug. Lyndon, is there any reason to assume that this would be something other than Osama bin Laden? Do we?
Osama bin Laden is a controlled entity. Osama bin Laden is not an independent force. Remember how he came into existence. Osama bin Laden was a wealthy Saudi. In the 1970s, during the Carter administration, or shall we say the Brzezinski administration, the idea of running an Afghanistan war on the borders of Soviet territory was cooked up by Brzezinski as a geopolitical operation. Well, Brzezinski was responsible. They don't necessarily cook it up. But all right, this thing started, and a Anglo-American unit running together with a certain section of the Pakistani military, the funny boys in the Pakistani military, set up this operation. The United States government and British government members, that is, our funny boys, went out and recruited a lot of Islamic people to fight communism and defend holy Islam and so forth. That's all right. They recruited in many countries, and they deployed them. Now, later, they kill some of the same people they deployed. they're expendable. so they don't really have an insurance policy because of what they were doing. But they were deployed in there. Osama bin Laden was one of the big funding agents of this, funding conduits, which was used by people, among others, then Vice President George Bush. This is Iran-Contra. It is what's called Iran-Contra, which I called it by other names, which I wouldn't put on the air. But, so this thing is left behind, and suddenly now we find Osama bin Laden becomes the name. But Osama bin Laden could not last the way he's running around if he didn't have big protection. And it's not just from the section of the Pakistani government or Afghanistan. It's from other governments who would like to see the effects that Osama bin Laden produces thrown around. So now you can blame Osama bin Laden. At some point, you go in and kill them, and you say the problem was solved. But you never considered who created Osama bin Laden, and who protected him, and deployed his forces and means for these purposes. And as we saw in terrorism in Italy in the 1970s, for example, the people who were running the so-called terrorist operations in Italy were not really the groups that had the credit for it. They were actually runaway NATO asset organizations, very high level. Same people that killed the former Prime Minister Aldo Moro in that period. So, in a case like this, don't assume that the popular name that everybody knows or the FBI quotes or so forth, this is the real problem. They may be part of the problem.
Well, our minds, especially in our degenerating Western culture, always runs for the simple answer. We want the kind of answer that will free us from our guilt and our responsibilities of the neglect of our government and our fellow man all these years. And so we run to the simplistic. And the simplistic, of course, is the big bad boogeyman from the Middle East who has caused us so many problems before. And I certainly understand what you're saying there, that the more simple we can make the presentation, then the less obligated any of us are. Anyway, why would they be doing this? I mean, here we have a market crashing. We don't just have a market crashing. We have an entire economy crashing within the arena of a culture that's crashing. We are, if war, massive war, were to break out in the Middle East any second, nobody would be surprised. If Putin were to be assassinated, if Arafat were to be assassinated, if Sharon were to be assassinated, nobody would be surprised. I mean, we're sitting on the powder keg of powder kegs. And with all of the other provocations that could occur around the world to stop a lot of the economic unity and development that is beginning to gain some momentum between the large powers on the other side of the planet, why in the world fly a jet in the World Trade Center?
This is to create a provocation inside the United States. I mean, that's the only reason that would be done. You probably, for example, stories may come out that this is done by some Arab group which is protesting the U.S. government's sympathy for Sharon or for the Israeli defense force. Sharon tomorrow. Because there's real conflict there, and these guys tend to shoot. It'd be some story like that. But what we're into is a period where the word is not terrorism. Terrorism is a part of the picture. The word is destabilization. And the problem part, from my standpoint, is that look at our own government. And we are in a sense, still a sort of a superpower. I think the term is, sadly, is not quite appropriate for a present state of affairs. But we used to be a superpower. We still have a dominant position. What kind of a government do we have? Well, the Bush administration. And you hear the think system is crashing. You see poor Treasury Secretary O'Neill babbling around. See, Rumsfeld has become a joke in his own defense department.
Well, I think the newspaper slug, the one I just most recently read, was that he's going to take on the Pentagon.
This is all a sideshow. The point is, the President George Bush doesn't function. He's been in there, and as I said, this January 3rd, when I first announced and made a prognosis to what his administration would be, it's been one catastrophe after another. Nothing he's proposed has actually worked. Some of the things he proposed have been done, but they are disasters. And he's not capable of being a president as such, except unless he were controlled by a group of advisors who would give him good advice and solve his problems on how to deal with situations. But he doesn't have that. He has a nut like Wolfowitz over there underneath Rumsfeld normally, who's actually running the Defense Department. You have Armitage in the State Department. Similar kinds of things. These guys, as I know them, are nuts. And they're not in there. Then you look at the Democratic Party. You have the statement from Daschle, who's the Senate majority leader now, saying he can't do anything. It's up to Bush, the president, who Daschle knows can't do anything.
Yeah, well, Daschle is saying, I think he said over the weekend, something like, well, you know, they got control of the House and they got control of the White House, and we have a very slim majority in the Senate, and boy, there's just nothing we can do.
Well, he's wrong, because he knows it. Because I've got a certain position in the Democratic Party, despite what Al Gore would like to think. And I could be in a position very easily to steer these guys into doing things that would begin to work, even with the limited strength the Democratic Party has today. And I think that if the party would do some of those things, we would do two things. We would not only be able to move and shake the population a bit into believing there's somebody up there that might help them, we'd also find a number of Republicans who are not nuts, who are simply patriotic and would listen to reason, would cooperate with the Democrats in doing some of the things we have to do.
Yeah, well,
we have a vacuum of leadership.
Well, all of the ills and the evils and the mistakes and the corruption that might have been involved with the Clinton administration, at least when you called the White House, there was somebody there that would answer the phone.
And especially when Bob Rubin was there helping Clinton. I may have not approved of what Bob did many times, but at least he was competent.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now we've got a situation where I'm afraid there'll probably just be a recording inviting you down to the ranch. Now, there was a recent comment here on the television a few moments ago that Bush would be making comments relative to this terrorist attack. This is the biggest thing since probably Oklahoma.
Much bigger.
Well, yeah, I think the implications of this will be much bigger.
Oh, it's much bigger.
I'm just waiting. You know, when Oklahoma first happened, the first two or three days, and I remember I was glued to the television set, the first two or three days, there was a large implication towards the Middle East and the Arabs that were running around town. And then they kind of covered that up, and that was out of the picture, and they never mentioned it anymore.
Well, this was largely a domestic covert operation.
Yes.
Which we had word of beforehand. Everybody had the word. And if I had been president, on the basis of just what I knew, I would have taken certain actions immediately, which would, security surveillance actions, in anticipation of exactly that kind of problem. So we were not mystified. The problem is we have the fun and games is being played by various institutions, and we don't have anybody really effectively in charge.
No. Bush just made a comment, said, the plane was an American Airlines Boeing 767 out of Boston. And they don't know whether there were any passengers on it or not. They think that it was a hijacked airplane. But a Boeing 767 from Boston was the plane that did it. And the president has guaranteed everybody he's going to bring the terrorists to justice. And he's talked to the governor of New York, and they're going to bring him to justice. And he said, God bless the victims. It's a little late for that.
Well, as a matter of fact, that is the worst thing he can do. If he was said, of course, we are going to go get to the bottom of this and deal with it in an appropriate way, that would be the right thing to say.
Yeah.
But to say that he's going to solve the problem by bringing somebody to justice, that is the worst thing he can say.
Yeah, because, again, it goes back to just underscore what you were saying at the very beginning, that if we can find a couple of guys running around New York right now trying to get out of town or Boston or wherever the thing took place, trying to hurry up and get on the next ship back to Saudi Arabia or whatever, like that was the end of the problem. But as you were pointing out there at the beginning, it's just part of a network that can only exist by the support and the organizational strength of some major superpower on the planet.
I can make a flat statement on that, Jack.
Please.
If I were president of the United States right now, I would have already acted before this happened, not even knowing that this was going to happen. And I would have had the following cooperation. I would have had cooperation from Russia, from Germany, from France, from Italy. I probably would have gotten a good deal from certain forces in Britain as well. And we would have, and Japan, and China, and Arab countries, including Egypt, and we would have put our heads together real quick, pooled our resources, and said, whether we agree on other issues or not, this kind of thing is not going to happen, and we're going to see to it it doesn't. That wouldn't work. The problem is, you've got the foolish president of the United States, and I say that advisedly. Now, a friend of mine just said in Massachusetts, and he's running for office up there for a congressional seat, he said, Bush can't even defend his daughters from being bombed.
Well, that took me a second. All right, Bush can't even protect his own daughters from being bombed. Well, out of respect for these, what's just happened here, still, that's hilarious.
I mean, the point, well, you've got to have a sense of humor even in the worst situation. If you don't, your head is not cool, and your judgment will not be clear. I always advise my friends, the worse it gets, the more laughter you better be able to generate. If you haven't got a sense of humor about any situation, no matter how serious.
Oh,
remember what Roosevelt did? Roosevelt did two things. In running for president after the disaster that Coolidge bestowed on Hoover, Roosevelt started his campaign in West Virginia with a famous statement talking about the forgotten man. And then when he entered office, he addressed the American people with a theme, there's nothing as much to be feared as fear itself. And the key thing, we've got a frightened citizenry, a frightened and confused world. We're in a state of denial because they're frightened. They wish to deny that this crisis, they wish to believe that the thing is going to bounce back miraculously tomorrow, that suddenly the Nasdaq will suddenly jump out of its grave and suddenly become prosperous again. The time that now is needed is to reassure, in particular, the American people that somebody is in charge. They know what those in charge know what they're doing, and they're going to fix the situation, and they will call upon the American people for support as needed. That would work. This kind of thing of vengeance-seeking and snarling and growling to prove how mad you are, this isn't government. This is sideshow. This is Bozo the Clown putting on an act.
So we've got a situation here where this could just be the beginning, especially with what we've got coming up with the Jacobin terrorist activity that a lot of people are expecting in Washington at this big summit at the end of the month. Because, I mean, we are so vulnerable now. When you were mentioning all these other countries that could get together and stop this, any one of them are vulnerable. But there seems to be an increasing vulnerability within the United States as we sink deeper into denial and bury our heads in the sand, and then go back to the old tried and true methods of fear-based living that we've always done with before, where our millennial fears and our Armageddonist concerns and all these things start coming back to the surface, and we get our old barking dog outfits out of the closet and get them back on again. Incidents like this in the midst of an economic crash, in the midst of a morality crash, could be the beginning of a provocation of some serious setbacks in this country, just from our own Justice Department, just from, you know, anything like this could get to a situation where we could find our own liberties in this country in serious attack just because of the level of incompetence that exists in the government in leadership positions, backed up or at least undergirded to some degree by some very malicious personalities that have been in the Justice Department and other part in Defense Department for decades, waiting for the right provocation to occur to move in to their crisis management operations.
And it won't work. The point is, they're idiots. And I really pity the current president. You know, because he's not a friend of mine. His father certainly was not a friend of mine. But he's president. And I think of him sitting in the office. And I realize the poor man has no conception and no capability of understanding what the world situation is or what's actually hitting him. He's got a Treasury Secretary, O'Neill, who certainly does not inspire confidence in any sane observer. You've got Wolfowitz, who's a nut. You've got Armitage, another nut. You've got problems with this, and then you look at the Democratic Party. You see this crazy Lieberman running around with this faith-based initiative. This is silly stuff. You see Daschle ducking, bobbing and weaving, so he doesn't take a punch. Here we are in a crisis, a financial crisis. Now we've got this terrorist thing, which probably indicates that more things are on the way, but maybe a different variety, but on the way. We have no leadership. You have the American people sitting out there being more and more frightened as this kind of thing occurs. And they look up and they go into the cockpit to see who's flying the plane that's in trouble, and they find a 3-year-old kid sitting in the pilot seat and nobody else there.
Yeah. That's
what our problem is. That's our biggest problem.
Yeah.
We have the means to deal with the worst kind of problem that I can envision is likely to happen now. But if we don't have the leadership, if we don't reach out to the kind of cooperation we could have, that I know I could have, with key parts of the world, other countries.
Yes. All right, I've got another traffic update to grab real quick. Don, you're on the Stockwell Show.
Hello.
We're getting some other reports here we want to confirm regarding some more terrorist activity occurring at other sites.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't want to mention it over the air because I would like to have that confirmed before I...
Yeah, right, fine.
Before I say what somebody just called in and said.
Okay, sir.
But, gee whiz, this is...
What a day!
What a day. We're sitting out here in the middle of this vast emptiness in the West, and we're removed from the East Coast culturally. We're removed politically. We are removed economically. We've kind of got this Marlboro Man attitude out here in the West that, well, hell with New York, and they're all a bunch of queers anyway. And as we go into deeper denial... trying desperately. I have been reporting to my listeners for some time now the every step of the breakdown that I've been able to investigate and report and get clear in my own mind of the economic collapse, of the political collapse. And we've seemed to escape it to a large degree, but now we're starting to have significant layoffs occurring in Utah. And it's finally becoming very real around here that we aren't a separate people. We're not this unique group of pioneer progeny that tamed the West, and we can tame any other kind of a problem. We are in the same ship. The ship has hit the iceberg. We don't have enough lifeboats. And what we need right now desperately is a captain who knows how to keep the ship alive long enough to keep it on the surface of the water. And as we get more and more of these indications constantly, I like the comment you made there a moment ago about the NASDAQ jumping back out of the grave. The implication, of course, is that it's dead. A plane has flown into the Pentagon. They've had an explosion at the Pentagon now.
That's confirmed.
I don't know if that's confirmed or not. It must be coming in from another. What's the source of that? CBS is reporting that a plane has flown into the Pentagon.
I hope that somebody's got some reports of where these planes were coming from.
Well, the one of the planes that hit the World Trade Center was definitely confirmed as an American Airlines 767 hijacked out of Boston. They haven't announced yet whether there was anybody on the plane or not.
It must have been. The point is, unless it's really a goof up, because how can a plane take off without clearance?
Yeah, exactly.
And if it's taking off without clearance,
everybody will know it.
It becomes an immediate security problem.
Yes. Yeah. It's the Pentagon. It is confirmed now on several news sources that the Pentagon is experiencing explosions right now. My goodness.
They mean business.
They're evacuating the White House at the moment. And yes, they mean business.
This is a very systematic operation. If they're snatching planes, if all three of these planes, the two we have in New York and this thing on the Pentagon, to get that kind of thing, to snatch planes like that, that's a pretty sophisticated operation.
Oh yeah, this isn't a bunch of malcontents of some grassroots organization finally striking back. You're going to have some rather heavy-duty intelligence network and some real intelligence experience with this.
The question is, where were the relevant intelligence agencies who are in charge of monitoring this problem? Now, I've been putting this out for some time. Not this, I didn't know this outbreak thing, but I assumed that was anything could happen. But on the Washington, D.C. targeting. So obviously this has, the Pentagon means this is obviously, clearly, Washington, D.C. target. This is obviously intended to imply something coming out of the Middle East. This means that there's been some kind of either incompetence or a fix on the whole security operation. Because you can't get this kind of thing without a real goof on the security side. So somebody in charge of security was not really very effectively in charge. You can't go around snatching planes in a coordinated fashion like this. You can't do it. Somebody has to be really sloppy.
Well, we've got, if this were arising from some Middle East effect, it's been almost a year now since the Clintons did their about-face with the Palestinians in order to secure election for Hillary with the Jewish vote in New York. And ever since then, there, I don't know what the death count is, between 2,000 and 3,000 maybe in the Middle East, just because of Hillary's need to get the Jewish vote.
Well, I think that was something that fell in there.
Well, that's probably true, but then Sharon's mount up there, march up the Temple Mount stairs.
But it's not Sharon. Sharon did. It's not Sharon's operation.
No, the thing
is it comes from the inside of the Israeli Defense Forces. And that Sharon is virtually a civilized human being compared to some of those guys in there. And I've been afraid that they might kill him in order to use his killing as a pretext for using, shall we call them, weapons of mass destruction against places like Baghdad and Damascus and Tehran.
Were they the forces behind Rabin's assassination?
Yeah, these same crowd. Absolutely. And they're people in the United States who politically, in a sense, are authors of the production of some of the nuts who have been shipped into Israel to increase the problem. Then, of course, you have the operation, which is you have them in the Arab world. You have some of the same people who are running the Israeli nuts are also running an operation by recruiting certain Islamic nationals, people of Islamic persuasion, to do similar kinds of things in order to set, you know, rub two sticks together to make a fire.
All right, these aren't isolated events. There's some orchestration, some intelligence behind all of this. This isn't just the IDF. It isn't just Osama bin Laden or somebody wanting to bring down the infidel in the name of Allah. We've got confirmed now the White House is being evacuated. The Pentagon is evacuated. It was just a fire. It wasn't a bomb, but they have a record of a U.S. military helicopter circling the Pentagon, and then there was a massive fireball. Yes, it could be another truck bomb. Those shape charges have proven to be very effective in the past. So, where does this end then? Not in the sense of in the future. Where does this end in the sense of organization? Where's this going back to, Lyndon? Who's doing this?
This goes back in a sense to me. Because what's happened is the United States no longer has leadership. That is officially. The present presidency, the Republican Party, as an organization in the Senate and the House, it's a complete moral and intellectual disaster. There are some good people in there. But there's not a leadership, a unified leadership, or anything like coherence. In the Democratic Party, in the Senate, which is now has the slim margin of majority in the Senate, has no leadership. It has no response to the reality of the present period. And you have when you have the leader of the Senate, the Democrat, the leader of the House, there, saying that he's not going to do anything because it's up to George Bush, when he knows that George Bush can't do anything of significance, complete irresponsibility. And then all the other institutions, political institutions, party institutions. The problem is that people have, for so long, have believed so deeply in the kind of changes in culture which were introduced over the past 35 years, especially since Nixon ran his Southern strategy, the campaign, that we have lost our sense of leadership in the nation. We've lost our sense of what the United States' leading role must be, not because of somebody's ego, but because of our responsibility in the world at large. I know, from my direct personal experience, and I have, you know, Jack, in a lot of countries, South America, Central America, different parts of Asia, Russia, Germany, Eastern Europe, Italy, so forth, England even. I know people in these countries. If I were in a position of leadership in Washington, and either president or advising a president, I know how to deal with this kind of problem. We have, and the world have the resources. The United States has the ability to get the cooperation on those resources. But what I fear now is that some fool is going to say, no, we're going to go along with the existing team. The existing team is what caused the problem. It's failed.
I got to go to another traffic update, but the FAA has just grounded all flights in the United States. This hasn't happened since World War II. All flights are now grounded in the United States. Don, how's our traffic?
We've got an accident westbound I-215 on the south side near Union Park. It is off.
Apparently, what we got here, Air Force. There are FAA flights in the air, of course, that are being brought down or being told to come down. President Bush is currently in Washington State at an elementary school talking about education. Well, you know.
Not so much for education, but maybe it keeps him calm.
Yeah, but he says he's going to get to the bottom of this in a hurry. There are pictures of Air Force One. Therefore, all flights are halted except Air Force One, and it's coming back to Washington. Maybe he's already on the plane. But the Pentagon's evacuated. The White House is evacuated. Gosh, maybe Leesburg better evacuate. You know, this is there's been a history of distractions that have been perpetrated to try to keep, you know, all of this Gary Condit stuff, you know, things like this, just distractions to keep people's minds away from what is taking place of a much more serious nature, not the least of which is what is happening in the marketplace, the stock exchange, and all the exchanges for that matter. This, I guess, is going to be the distraction of all time. It's hard to imagine this. I mean, this is, we've got a break coming up here shortly. I think we have you scheduled for another hour, don't we, Lynn? Yeah, good. Because we can all take a look at the television during the NBC news break. I can imagine what they're going to be talking about on the radio. And then we can get back together at 8 o'clock and get that going. But we've got just a couple of more minutes here. And that is, you know, we're dealing with a mindset here that is certainly not oriented towards the preamble of our Constitution. And in fact, I don't know that they're even oriented towards any basic Judeo-Christian thought in the divine nature of man, but more in the sense of some misguided Darwinian concepts that we are part of an evolutionary tree that needs to be curbed and culled and husbanded. And who will stop at nothing. You know, who else, what else, there's no way to substantiate this, but jets into a building is one thing, but there's a lot of other things that can be done with our water supply and our air and the biological chemical stuff that could be going on right now that isn't quite as obvious as an exploding office building in downtown New York.
Well, the bad problem is now this is going to generate, obviously, just as you indicate, it's going to generate whatever happens really that is an actuality. The paranoia is going to produce effects just as if it had happened, even if it didn't.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Because that's how we work, isn't it? Yeah, and the thing that worries me the most about this is not that the initial attack may be over with, but what will be a leaderless government's response to this?
That's a question. This could be the worst thing the United States could do to itself.
Yeah, it's...
Nobody trusts the United States abroad right now. The election, what happened on November 7th last year, what happened in the Supreme Court...
Well, it was a coup. It was a Supreme Court coup for the White House.
But all these things, from the standpoint of Europeans and others abroad, looking at the United States, but Japan is on the edge. It's taken about all it can take in terms of blackmail from the United States. China is reconciled itself to the fact that the United States is the market of last option.
Same with Mexico.
Yeah, same thing. Mexico, the president of Mexico, presumably the one guy, George W. Bush would know where to find him. Came to Washington to meet with the president. Brought up an agenda which the president should have been informed about beforehand, undoubtedly was. And the president meets with President Vicente Fox, on this question of immigration, which we ought to have a working understanding on. If you don't have the final solution, at least you can be working at it and say we're going to work on it. We don't. He turned it down. The president publicly turned it down. Sent the president of Mexico, presumably the only man, the only president on this planet, who really liked or tried to like George Bush. And he sends him packing to Mexico in desperation about a political crisis which the United States, in a sense, is imposing upon its neighbor Mexico. This is the kind of thing that people around the world, seeing this happen in the United States, if the president reacts, and we're going to get revenge, we're going to teach everybody a lesson method, the president will have the worst possible effect for the United States. This is not the way to react.
All right. Why don't you take a break for about 5, 6, 7 minutes, Lynn? We are going to go to the NBC news break. Yeah, you just hold on, sir. I'll be right back with you very shortly. This is K-Talk, KTKK, Sandy, Salt Lake, Ogden, and Highland. Stick around. We've got another hour of this. I can't think of anybody I would want on the radio more right now at this moment in history than Mr. LaRouche. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Apparent terrorist act. That's what President Bush says about planes that hit the World Trade Center towers in New York City.
Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country.
Traffic reporter Tom Kaminsky flew nearby after the first plane hit one of the towers.
We are now looking at flames shooting out of the north side of number one World Trade Center, but there are at least some windows blown out and smoke billowing out of the opposite side.
About 18 minutes later.
Right, oh my God, another plane has just hit another building. Flew right into the middle of it. Explosion.
The second plane hitting the other tower. U.S. officials are saying the first plane was an American Airlines 767 hijacked after leaving Boston. Also, a fire reported at the Pentagon, an aircraft down there. The FAA has ordered airports closed. I'm Steve Cahan.
Boy, I'll tell you, that ought to just really give you some hope and confidence that George Bush Jr. would be directing a world war.
Well, the gist of the thing about Pearl Harbor was that Roosevelt planned it. You have some people who spread that myth.
Yep.
They say that because they wish to believe it, not because they have any evidence. The evidence is quite contrary. The British had organized Japan to bomb Pearl Harbor, to attack it, a naval attack on Pearl Harbor, back at the beginning of the 1920s. When the British were allied with Japan against the United States on the question of the naval power agreement. And this is the thing that Billy Mitchell talked about in his court-martial. And he wasn't particularly liked for that. But what happened is contrary to what the U.S. expected, because they did send the aircraft carriers out to sea just because of the tension with Japan then. In order not to put the aircraft carriers at risk from the Japan Navy. And we saw what happened at Midway later as a result of that wise decision.
Yeah, and the Coral Sea.
But some people would like to think that if you convince the American people that Pearl Harbor has been bombed again, that you can use that effect, which I saw on the streets on Sunday, that famous Sunday of December 7th, 1941. They can use that event to mobilize the American people, in particularly under the conditions of present denial and hysteria about the economy and so forth. They can do something and mobilize the United States in a foolish direction. This will drive the world berserk. Think that you have lunatics in the United States would even threaten to go to world war over a thing like this. And instead, we should recognize we've made some mistakes and correct them real fast and coolly.
Yeah.
With as little panic as possible.
I got another one for you. The smoke in downtown Manhattan is clearing, and there is no second tower.
Okay. That I can understand. But that also is first. Remember, this is awful. But those of us who have
what response can the United States possibly have now?
The United States needs a Franklin Roosevelt who would say we have nothing to fear as much as fear itself. Yes, we have things to fear, but nothing as much as fear itself. Nothing as much as panic itself. This is a time for cool heads. You do not win wars by panicking, by fight forward. What I'm afraid of from this White House is because of its very weakness, it will tend to go into flight forward. I mean, actually, George Bush, W. Bush, is not exactly a combat veteran. So you don't expect him. I mean, he may have been in the National Guard down in Texas. He's not the kind of guy you want in charge of a military major unit in a time of war. You want somebody with a cool head. You want MacArthur's. Time of war. You want commanders like that. You want leaders like that who do not blow their gaskets. And even in the face of the most horrible penalties, do not lose self-control. I'm afraid that there are people in Washington who are going to delight in having a sexual fantasy about losing self-control. They're going to pull out some kind of a Hollywood horror movie and try to act that out as a scenario.
This advice of nothing to fear but fear itself goes right down to the last man listening to this program right now. We have people in Washington right now who I can see them sitting at a table saying, we have got to have the president order martial law immediately.
Absolutely.
That kind of crazy thinking.
Absolutely. The worst thing they can do. It's the worst thing for the security of the United States to put a stunt like that. By the way, Dewitt has to be a real certifiable historical idiot.
Well, what can be, what should be the U.S. response in the next 24 to 48 hours to this?
I would hope that some of these guys get smart enough to call me up.
Well,
because there are people that I would think of as the kind of team that could be pulled together as a special team to advise the president and other institutions on how to respond to this, and to reach out to other governments informally for the informal kind of cooperation which will make the formal cooperation work.
All right, I've got a couple of people with some questions for you, if you don't mind.
Sure, sure.
I'm going to go ahead and bring you folks on the air along with Lyndon LaRouche. Ryan, you're on the Stockwell Show.
Hi, Lyndon. It's exciting to talk to you. I really haven't been introduced to your movement until I started listening to the Jack Stockwell Show. But I find that you have quite a few interesting things to say. And boy, Jack's been talking about this crap for a long time, and I'll tell you, it's really scary. I've wanted to see if maybe you thought that maybe this was an oligarchical ploy to gain power at a key time, or if you think maybe this is just a random terrorist attack.
No, it's not random. This is obviously a highly planned attack by a very capable agency. This kind of thing is, if it is coordinated as portrayed, and I see no reason to work any other working hypothesis at this time. If it becomes less, fine, be grateful. But this already is a horror show of first magnitude.
Oh, my heck, I can't believe it. I mean, I can't believe they even collapsed the tower. It just
But this couldn't happen, but this is not amateur night.
No.
This is big. Therefore, the first thing we need is cool heads.
I agree, and that's what I'm afraid of. Just like Jack said, I'm afraid of them declaring martial law. I can just see it as plain as day, them saying they need to come and
that would be the end of the United States. The United States could not take martial law.
No.
Disintegrate.
I know they couldn't take it, and that's what I'm afraid of. I mean, it just, oh my gosh, I can't believe how scary it is if they, and I guess I just see them doing it as plain as day. That's the thing that terrifies me.
You get some Ku Klux Klan mentalities who think that would work, but anybody who knows anything, he knows that this country right now is morally very fragile. This country can disintegrate as a nation. It's very fragile as a result of what's been done to it. As a result of the entertainment that supplied it.
Correct.
What appears on television, other forms of mass entertainment.
Well, I think it's all been a ploy over the last 50 years by the oligarchy to obtain the power that they want over this country.
Well, it's actually to change the world in a certain way. But I'm not drawing any conclusions beyond what I know, because I have to be cool at this time, because I'm vindicated in a sense.
Yeah.
And therefore, I have not got the luxury of indulging myself in any wild speculation. I have to be cool. Anything I say, I have to be right.
I'm glad that we have a person who's going to be.
No, so I'll say what I know, but I'm not going to leap to conclusions. I'm going to see what the facts are. But in the meantime, I know the first thing is keep cool, especially those who are in leading positions.
I agree. I appreciate your time, Lyndon.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
What happened, what they're saying now, Lynn, is that the second plane flew into one of the structural corners of the second building, knowing that it would bring that. They think that's what brought the second one down, was that the plane, obviously, because I don't know either, but I would suspect that anybody that would be going to that kind of an extreme move would have those planes loaded with sufficient explosives.
Understood. Well, now, the fuel alone is something, you know.
Yeah.
It's sure we have to take off a fuel plane is, has a certain amount of explosive potential. No, I think we just got to get more evidence. But obviously, what we know is that this doesn't conform to any coincidence of any kind.
All right, I'm going to get another traffic update. Then we come back. I want to talk about what the IDF would be trying to accomplish with an act like this. All right, let's get Don on here. Don, you're on the Stockwell Show.
Good morning. I'm Don Levitt, KTOC Traffic.
Thanks, Don.
You bet.
It's interesting here. 23 minutes after the hour, my guest, Lyndon LaRouche. I've often told you, ladies and gentlemen, that my source of information that I use relative to my radio programs comes from a majority of sources from around the planet. Newspaper headlines out of Germany, out of China, out of Russia, out of South America, France, Italy, the British Isles. And one thing that is predominant in international media that you do not see in the United States media is the discussion of Mr. LaRouche and his ideas regarding a new Bretton Woods individual state sovereignty. The end of this economic system in the sense that it has to be completely reorganized, or what has happened, these are my words, what has happened in Manhattan, what happened to the rest of the world financially. And I have often talked about that. I have given you phone numbers where you can check in the information yourself. I've had information in my office that you can come by in my clinic to pick up additional information. And what is going on right now, I've been talking about 3 to 4 years ever since my association with Mr. LaRouche, in the sense of the orchestration of events leading in this particular direction to force the United States to come to war in the Middle East. And I've talked about that. I've talked about how I don't want to see my sons going to war in the Middle East, but I can't help but see that day materializing before me. Lynn, is the American government crazy enough right now to have a war response to this?
Well, try stupid enough.
All right.
Then that's possible.
Who would they go shooting at?
Well, they would just react.
You know, more intensified bombings of Baghdad or something stupid like that.
Or some foolish thing. They would react out of stupidity. See, the problem here is that years ago, we had certain criteria like industry, agriculture, science, physical reality. And therefore, you had a population which would look at things in a practical way, in the way a progressive farmer, the way a small entrepreneurial industrialist would look at things, an engineer, so forth. We don't have that anymore. We have a population which lives more and more in fantasy land. And you have leaders who are selected. Look, let me be frank. I think this is a time we've got to be very honest, no strained politeness. Look, we had two idiots running for president as of up to November 7th of last year. One dumb with a real bad combination around him. And you had the other one who was a mental case of a different kind.
Sure.
This is a fact. I mean, this is a reality. This is not the time to be polite or to be diplomatic. And therefore, what happened is the institutions, including the mass media, the money bags of various parts of the country, put their money behind these two specimens. Now, I was the best qualified, but put that aside. You had other people, like Kerry in Massachusetts, for example, and other people who were more qualified. They were seen. And even if they had shortcomings, if you put them in the Oval Office and put a good bunch of advisors around there, you might get a good process of government out of them. We don't. So what we have is we have an American people which sat there and watched while what they knew to be a mental case and a dummy were the only available presidents of the United States. And anybody who understands what the presidency of the United States means as an absolutely unique quality of institution on this planet would realize the importance of having a qualified president in that office at the time when the financial crisis, the global monetary crisis, was inevitable. And these two clowns, and Lieberman as well, the vice presidential candidate, didn't say a word about the crisis, the financial crisis, which was then oncoming. People have lost tens of trillions of dollars globally from the collapse of this system. In one sector of the U.S. financial market alone, $3 trillion, which hit a lot of poor people, as well as others, who were putting their savings in there, hoping to get that extra nickel to stretch their pension, that sort of thing. We have a bubble that's about to bust in real estate now. So these issues are facing, and nobody was paying attention to any of the obvious, massively obvious, real issues coming up. So now you've got a population which, if you read the print press, you look at the so-called television news of various kinds, including the stuff that's on this website, and you see absolute gibberish and idiocy. So what do you expect? The American people have no sense of what the reality of the real current situation is. And therefore, you have leaders who don't even want to know what reality is. They want to have a fantasy. And it's extremely dangerous. We've got to get cooler heads together now and put some direction into this. But I'm really afraid of what would happen if you leave the decisions to be made in the hands of just a few who are the obvious ones right now.
Well, this could, you know, I'm thinking that it's almost impossible for the United States to not do anything. You know, when you looked at what happened in Oklahoma City, nothing on this. I mean, nothing against, I'm sorry for the people whose lives were lost and family and such. But this, if it is as bad as I think it is, what happened today, the United States can't just do nothing.
Well, the United States, first of all, the President of the United States or someone who's next to him is intelligent, should immediately call President Putin of Russia. And between the two of them, they should talk to all the key leaders in France, Germany, Italy, and so on. Japan as well. Bring the Chinese in on it. The Chinese will have their own reaction, but bring them in on it. Through a group of leaders. And say, this has happened in the United States. You guys all know what this kind of thing means. Now let's put this thing, this genie, back in the bottle. That's what has to be done. Then tell the American people you're doing it. Say, we are not going to allow this kind of situation, which obviously had roots, to continue. We and other nations are going to cooperate to bring this under control. That's what the American people have to hear from the president, or somebody around him, or somebody else in charge. Maybe Don Rumsfeld. Maybe Powell. Colin Powell is the guy to deliver that message. Somebody's got to deliver that message now.
A conjointed effort among the... this is just in. Another plane has been hijacked, and it's en route to Washington, D.C. right now.
Probably shoot it down.
Well, they're going to have to. If they're aware of that, they'll have to shoot it down. Oh, my goodness.
This is like a wireless of your Hollywood scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, Orson Welles and his War of the Worlds thing out of New Jersey back in the 30s. Could it have been any more real than this? This is absolutely incredible.
I think they're probably, then if this is happening, they'd probably be. All the more reason for somebody to do what I suggested. President, who would accept the call, of course, from Bush? Bush say he's calling on his behalf, put the right people on the phone. Yet right to, it's still daytime in Moscow, or evening time. It's 10 hours difference. So to call him right now, and to call the relevant people in Germany, France, somebody in London, or if this Prime Minister's any good for me. But set up a consolidated arrangement and say we're going to stop this thing now.
Do we have the leadership, though, to support that? Do we have the orientation? I mean, we've got three different basic levels of thinking that exist inside Washington right now. You've got this Brzezinski-Huntington clash of civilizations kind of concept. You have Ashcroft and Armitage in that group. And then you've got another group that is a little oligarchical in their design as well, in the sense of bringing everything in totally under control of Wall Street. You know, if you had, I mean, I can't think of a Sergeant York mentality in Washington.
I think it's perfectly legitimate for, see, the President of the United States has certain constitutionally inherent emergency powers.
Yeah.
I would not really declare a national emergency. That's probably the wrong thing to do because it would activate the wrong things. But I would use the emergency powers of the President, and I would use the person of George W. Bush. He's president after all. You know, but forget how he got there. He's president. He has got to, as president, to enter into an emergency discussion with prominent leaders of other nations and to try to bring the world community more or less into agreement with it. But quickly. And report that agreement to the American people now. Preferably within hours.
That's to calm, to bring down that fear factor.
To bring it down, he's got to do something for change. This guy has done nothing so far as president. This is the time for him at last to shoot that, you know, bolt and do something. All he has to do, he doesn't have to be a genius. All he has to do is call Putin. And I'm sure that he'd get cooperation from Putin. And with, on that basis, if those two powers, which are the former superpowers, come to an agreement to bring other nations together as a consolidative basis, what are we going to do to stop this show right now to make sure it doesn't happen?
Yeah, exactly.
And then report that back to the American people. That is exactly my drummers. That is what should happen within hours.
The numbers that are coming in right now between the two buildings, 50,000 people work in those two buildings. And they're showing a shot from the Statue of Liberty right now, and you cannot even see Manhattan because of the smoke.
This is big. Somebody went for a big.
Well, this is the financial capital of the world that we're dealing with here.
Actually, London's the financial capital.
Well, okay.
It's the image of the financial capital.
Right. I agree with that.
Sometimes the image is bigger than the
That's right. That's right. And because the image of the United States and the position it holds in the rest of the world and what New York means to the United States, it's like going for the jugular, or in this case, the carotid.
Somebody wants this thing to go out of control. That's why they did it. This is not an attack. This is a provocation. It's a provocation with an intention behind it. Create a programmed reaction from the institutions of the United States. This is not some dumb guy with a turban someplace in the world trying to get revenge for what's going on in the Middle East.
Yes.
This is something different.
Those of you who are interested, you're welcome to call in here and talk to Mr. LaRouche yourself. You won't get an opportunity like this very often. Locally, 254-5855. Utah County, 470-5855, and North Davis, Weber County, 670-5855. I'm going to give you, again, a toll-free number where you can get some more intelligence on all the stuff that we're talking about. 1-888-347-3258. 1-888-347-3258. About 25 minutes before the top of the hour. Randy, you're on the Stockwell Show.
Yeah, I was in Washington less than a week ago, and I just went there with the feeling that I probably wouldn't see it intact again.
Well, that was prophetic.
Well, I've been feeling this, and I have feelings now about the Olympics here, and I want your comment on it.
Well, what we want to do here is, you know, I don't want to step on anybody's feelings, Randy, but at a moment like this, what we have to be using is knowledge, fact-based knowledge, common sense, and a cool head.
Well, I think we need to have some thought what's coming, too.
Well, what's coming is what's going to come in the next days and next hours. If the President of the United States would support a people that makes the wrong mistake, the world's going to be in hell. And that's the hurdle we've got to get over. If the President of the United States and people around him panic and react to this, as some of the press leaks so far that I've heard of are indicating, then this world is going to hell. Therefore, we have to worry about the next hours.
Yes, and what our response is going to be those next few hours. Randy, thanks for your call. Richard, on a cell phone, you're on the Stockwell Show.
Yeah, just kind of repeated what I... No, I don't want to repeat this. I was worried the Olympics and the security and the risk that we're going to be at in about February. The whole thing is worrisome to me, everything. But the Olympics was on my mind, and that's what I was going to say.
That's fine, that's all right. But the point is, the next hours are going to be decisive.
Yeah, I understand that.
I mean, the point is, sometimes when you go to the Olympics, think of yourself maybe as in denial. Here, the next hours, the existence of the United States is in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And security about the Olympics, to be raised that as an issue, is typical of what people react to. It's like the, fight forward or go into a foxhole under conditions of warfare.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, if you run for president again, I'm voting for you, because you sound get worse common sense than anybody ever in government any place. So
thanks, Richard. Thanks. Well, there's one vote from Utah for you, Lyndon.
Thank you.
Yeah. Helen, you're on the Stockwell Show.
Thank you so much, Dad. Doctor, Mr. Luge, this system, capitalism here in the developed countries, has become very expensive for them to invest. They need quick returns on their expensive investment, quick big returns, so that it is cheaper for them to invest in a foreign country and they can wait for long-term results. Do you think that this system has become so expensive? I used to think a collapse nobody wanted, but now perhaps they think a collapse would bring this system... would consolidate their gains. What do you think about that?
No, I think they're all crazy.
Might consolidate these people who are establishing a global government.
They don't have any sense at all. They'll grab assets, but they don't have any sense about the future.
May I hang up?
Yeah, go ahead, Helen.
Thank you.
They don't have any sense about the future. And I don't see... I deal with Washington. I deal with these circles. And they just don't, there's no sense in the leadership of the Republican or Democratic Party. There may be individual exceptions to that, but I'm talking about the party as an organization and the federal government as an organization. They have no sense of anything in the future. They are in lollipop land when it comes to economics.
You have made the comment in the past that one of the clear-cut... more obvious descriptions of somebody who simply cannot be trusted in what they have to say regarding economics as someone who has been to economics school.
Well, generally, there are a few exceptions of people who have studied economics who have the sense to know what they don't know.
Yes.
That's where I find sensible people. Those who think they have all the answers based on what is taught as generally accepted doctrine, they're dangerous.
All right, we're going to go to traffic really quick, and then we'll be right back. Craig up in the north, you'll be next. Questions regarding martial law. Don, the traffic.
Hey, thanks.
This means there's no panic on the streets in Salt Lake. We've got reports coming in right now of a plane crashing in Pittsburgh. We'll get more information on that here in a moment. Craig, you're on the Stockwell Show.
Thanks, Mr. LaRouche. With your knowledge of the protocol for the institutions of government and their reaction to something of this magnitude today, do you have any feelings of martial law?
I think it'd be the wrong thing to do. I think we should have a quiet emergency where law enforcement and other agencies act on alert, pull in their reserves to have them available, double check the security, pull security officers who were off duty today, back in, go over the files, check, because we don't know what. See, you're going to have things that are going to go off, not necessarily as a result of any centralized plan. The things that go off, simply they are ignited by the kind of atmosphere. You're going to have people going crazy.
Yes.
You're going to have all these kinds of States should be mobilized to have a heightened sense of security, but not martial law and not a national emergency. Despite the horrible degree of awfulness of what happened in New York, New York has an emergency. They have a physical emergency that are going to require a lot of assistance. There are going to be other places, if they get hit, are going to require assistance. All right, that kind of mobilization, yes. But keep it calm. The worst thing that can happen to us now is that the nut factor turns loose and complicates what is already a terrible problem.
Well, and what the thought that comes to my mind is the Gulf War and the way, you know, the president's father reacted to that. A knee-jerk reaction like that right now would be terrible.
We got too many jerks already. No, we need Congress. That's why I emphasize that somebody has to, I think, press on President Bush and President, who's not his father, and may have a different reaction.
I just left my office building, the whole office is down, moving around the television, and the fear in the room is just incredible.
Thanks, Craig. Craig,
thank you.
Then you go back there, Craig, and institute a sane, calm mind and make sure that they don't panic.
Right.
Give them the Roosevelt inaugural address.
That's right.
Nothing to fear but fear itself.
Give them what I told you. What I told them on the air.
Yes. Thanks, Craig.
Honor talking to you, Mr. Roosh.
Thank you.
Good. All right. About 15 minutes before the top of the hour, there is a line available. 254-5855, if you'd like to talk to Mr. LaRouche, an announced candidate already, a pre-candidate for the 2004 presidential election in the Democratic Party. I reported to you a year ago in the Arkansas, I think it was the Arkansas primaries, where the votes were stolen, the kinds of things that were done in Michigan. The things were done within the Democratic Party to make sure Mr. LaRouche never made it to the convention. And so that they could deliver the cigar store Indian to you, Mr. Al Gore. I don't know if they're ready yet to listen. It's like the old Don McLean song on Vincent. Perhaps they never will. But one thing that's absolutely certain, of all the things you've had to say this morning, the thing that smacks me with the greatest amount of truth and reality is this very calm response that must be taking place in all of our minds and hearts right now. Fear can drive people into some of the most bizarre, most ridiculous, most murderous, suicidal behavior imaginable. And they're probably already a certain sector of the country heading for the hills, which is exactly the opposite of what we should be doing at this point in time. And those of you who are listening to this program, listening to Mr. LaRouche, who haven't gone to work, or you're talking to people at work, or talking to family. See, I have a brother-in-law right downtown Manhattan. He's the first one that came to my mind. Well, not downtown. He's a little north up near Cornell. But still a little my concern. I'll be talking to him as soon as the phone lines can be established. But still, wherever you're talking to family, wherever you're talking to coworkers or whatever else, you must keep a cool head at this point in time. Boy, we have so little facts as to what's happened. And we've been dealt a heavy, heavy blow. 50,000 people work in those two buildings. They're both the buildings are now on the ground. It's probably going to take a month before all this information comes out. Let's go on here. Sharon, you're on the Stockwell Show.
Hi, Jack.
Hi.
I was just commenting on an observation that today's date is 9-1-1, actually.
Oh.
It's kind of coincidental. Seems like in tragedies, things like that are coincidental.
Yeah, 911.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The other thing I was going to say is I live here in Park City, and I don't think the Olympics is a topic for worry. I think our economy and our stock exchange is what we need to be worried about and more immediate.
Yes.
And I have a future son-in-law who works for Legg Mason in Florida, and he said, from what they've heard, it's going to be closed for the whole week.
The market?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm supposed to go to a stock market report here in 2 minutes, and I suspect that's probably what they're going to say, that there is no market.
Well, I'm very concerned about the economy, and I know that Mr. LaRouche is very expert in that area, and if he would expound on some of that, we'd be interested.
All right, thanks,
Thank
Sharon.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. One good thing we can say about this, if it does close down the market for a week, that it'll take another week for it to crash.
Well, the other thing, what you say, you know, the system is going to crash, the financial system. Accept it. Don't say it never will happen. It's going to happen. It's happening right now. do to save the economy? And to save the economy means do something that may not have been too popular in much of the Salt Lake community recently. Go back and think about what Franklin Roosevelt did in a situation which is admittedly less severe than the world faces today in terms of the economy. But what he did worked. He took an economy that had been ruined by Teddy Roosevelt, by Woodrow Wilson, Calvin Coolidge. And with all the difficulty he had in doing it, and the mistakes he made in the process, he got the economy up. What we have to do is take that approach. We're going to keep the jobs functioning. We're going to keep the economy functioning. There are ways to do it. Roosevelt pioneered in that direction. We know a lot more of how to do that now than we did when he was president. We're going to have to do it. It's simply that way. Think clearly. We can always, as a nation state, with the powers of our government, the powers of our presence, there is no financial or monetary crisis which this government cannot bring under control and cannot utilize the situation to bring about a recovery. So that's the way we have to think about it.
All right, we're going to go to the Wall Street Journal report here in just a moment. I don't know if there's, you know, what they're going to be. If it's only for a second, we'll be right back, of course. But I got about 30 seconds. Lynn, who was it that fired the missile into the MI6 building a while ago? Do you remember that? Yeah, in London. That.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a little bit mysterious, but as to who did what to whom. But obviously, it was an operation. These things don't happen. The British system, the British have through their Privy Council apparatus.
All right. Let's, we're going to jump over here really quick to the, all the news web pages. The pages can't be displayed. This is interesting. I keep trying to go to these news web pages I was going to before. Maybe it's because they're updating them. But let's see what we can pick up here, or if we can pick up anything. No, I'm getting an empty signal here. There is no Wall Street Journal report. Oh, the building has been evacuated. That's why. All right, the stock exchange has been evacuated. All right, well, that takes care of the market for today. Well, at least it'll last for another day. Lynn, you were saying there a moment ago that the system was over. Now, what a lot of my listeners need to understand, Mr. LaRouche, is the difference between our economic systems of this country that's driving this market crash and basic economics. But there's a difference between, you can go in right now and change the economics to save the system rather than leaving the same system of economics that's currently afloat and watching it crash on the shores of absolute bankruptcy. There are things that can be done right now to save our system and leave it intact, or not the system, but the economy of this country, with a drastic change in the system.
Very simply, you just use the principle of general welfare, which is the, as it's actually intended, in the preamble of the Constitution. As Roosevelt used that authority, you declare bankruptcy when needed. For example, most of the banks in the United States are potentially bankrupt if they're not already bankrupt. Well, do you let the banks shut down? If you don't, you have the Treasury Department move in on the Federal Reserve System, which is the mother of these things, take over the Federal Reserve System under bankruptcy reorganization, and under the authority of bankruptcy reorganization in cooperation with the states, who also control the banks. You make sure that banks that must keep their doors open will keep their doors open. You must ensure that employment is maintained. You must ensure that actually it grows. You must ensure that pensions are paid. You must ensure that communities function. And you must also have some growth. Otherwise, how are you going to reorganize out of bankruptcy if you don't have some real growth? Which means that certain projects, like infrastructure projects, necessary ones, are put into place to absorb some of the unemployment, which is inevitable, and get the economy moving again. On that basis, using nothing but the precedents we have in our national law, national history, we could reorganize this economy out of a virtually total monetary and financial collapse by the will of government and the cooperation of the people, good leadership, in a very short period.
I'm thinking of about two or three different directions I want to go here, but we've only got a few minutes left. I want to get Max on here real quick. Let me give you another number again, ladies and gentlemen. 1-888-347-3258. 1-888-347-3258. For more information on what we've been talking about today. Max, you're on the Stockwell Show.
Hello.
Hey.
You know, we've seen the world economy fall pretty far. I think we just, with the World Trade Centers both collapsing, I think that was the domino, the last domino to fall to world collapse. Seriously. And I got quite a bit of money in the bank. I sold some land recently. I'm thinking, do I need to go pull that out? Or is it, would it do me any good to pull it out?
I would think that's the question. Would it do any good to pull it out? You know, we're going toward a gold reserve system in various countries, including Russia. 12 countries that now have gold coins, which are more or less a monetary unit. And the gold is going to increase. So I think we're headed for a gold reserve system. I think our basic option, above all things, is apart from being prudent, just plain prudent, be conservative. Don't go for the bucks. Go for to save as much as you can. Diversify your risk. And try to keep something there so if something goes down, you have something else. You know, good sense. But the point is we have to get the government to use its powers to start a reorganization and recovery program with an understanding that we have to save the American people and the economy and their future.
I think the cow's out of the barn now. You know what I mean? I'm talking, what do I do right this moment? Because
diversify. Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, with the bank.
Go for the least minimal risk.
Okay, so you're saying go pull some out and get it diversified right now, or?
Diversify.
That's about the only chance I got. Because there might be a run on the bank tomorrow, right?
Diversify your risk. Buy some government bonds if you can.
No, that's one of the safest things out there.
Right.
Is government bonds.
Oh, yeah.
Short-term government bonds.
Your deposit, your insured deposits, and the regular system.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two of the most secure things. If you don't have a lot of good gold there that you can turn into a monetary asset.
Right.
That's a good idea.
Thanks, Max.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Just a few minutes left here. I can't tell you how much of an honor this is to have you on my program.
It's fun to be with you, Chuck.
Well, yeah, it's fun to have you here. I've got, we're going to try and squeeze in. Oh, he's not going to come on? Oh, I thought we were going to squeeze in another caller here for a moment. The latest now, fighter planes are scrambling to this hijacked plane. I guess they've got a hijacked plane on its way to Washington. They're going to shoot her down. Force it off, to a path different, but, boy, I'll tell you, this is, ever since you mentioned this at the very beginning of the program, Lynn, it's been, keeps coming back up in my little prefrontal cortex here, and that is that the Arabs don't have the ability to pull something of this level off. You feel pretty strongly about that.
I know the Arab governments. I've been talking to them. Hello. Indirectly over some period. These are the key ones. And they do not want this kind of thing. But I know who does want it.
All right. Now, you were talking about possibly the IDF, the Israeli
Defense. There are certain factions in the IDF.
There are certain factions within it. Just like there are certain factions within the Pentagon that would love for us to go to war in the Middle East.
And so are things like that. Exactly. Like Wolfowitz, for example.
Yes.
I don't think the world is safe with someone like him in the Defense Department.
Yes.
He never served in the military.
Wolfowitz?
To my knowledge, he never had actual service in the military. I don't think he knows what that means psychologically. I think people who have some experience in war times, service or something like that, may have some sense of what the reality of military operations are. Particularly if they got to some higher rank or some intelligence. Or if they've studied military history with that background.
Yes.
They might have some sense of what they're talking about. A guy like Wolfowitz impresses me. The kind of things I've seen him do, he doesn't know what time it is. He's dangerous. He's dangerous not because he's capable. He's dangerous because he's incapable. It's a very bad idea to put that in that game.
Well,
our generals would agree with me, too.
Yes. Yeah, well, we have about a minute left, Lynn. We got a minute left. Can you turn or can you bring something sublime out of this?
Yeah, I think the point is, you know, when you get a crisis, which is like a bird. I mean, this weather report is in New York. You're talking about 50,000 people possibly killed. Do you realize that's in the order of magnitude of the official death toll?
Of Vietnam.
Vietnam?
Yes.
So this is not a minor thing. This is not something that happened. This is not a terrorist incident. This is something much bigger. But when you get into a crisis like this, the first thing you have to do, especially terrible crises, the more terrible they are, the more this principle applies. Do not panic. Do not shout fire in a crowded theater. Get the people safely. And what's needed now is to recognize that we got to this mess because the institutions of our government, forget who did it, forget who did whatever's done. But think about this could not have happened if our government functioned. And the reason our government didn't function and doesn't function, I hope that changes quickly now, is because nobody was paying attention.
Yes.
Therefore, let us pay attention and recognize that when we're running the economy the way we're running it, the way the things we've been doing, we have set ourselves up for this kind of crisis. The thing to respond to a crisis like this is to remove long-term and medium-term causes of the crisis itself, of the situation which allowed this to happen and come to this pass.
Lyndon, we've got to go.
Good.
Thank you so much, sir, for being my guest today.
Thank you, sir.
We'll talk to you again.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.